together again, you and I, chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, April 22nd, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show talking about more controversy in Hartford over state vaccine mandates and religious exemptions. Is this a lasting byproduct of dishonesty during the COVID pandemic? Hearst Connecticut Media's Dan Haar dropped by as well to chat about the major stories around the state, including the ongoing controversy over former New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart. Yeah, we start today. We're off and running here. We start. What do you want to start with, balloons or vaccines? What do you want, huh? Yeah, that's a quinella there. That's a good doubleheader there. That's a nice double scoop there. Balloons or vaccines? Let's start with a vaccine, shall we? As we go round and round and round. And, you know, prior to COVID, remember COVID back in 2019, late 2019, early 2020? COVID, what's this? Is that a new indie rock band? Hey, dude, you see COVID here? No, no, no. And again, millions of people died. I'm not making light of that. But that also seems like far away now, a long time ago. We were pretty much out of it by the end of, what, 2004? What is it? Is the epidemiologist told us, and they turned out to be right. 2 years in, then bottoming out for a couple of months, then 2 years out. So right around the turn of 2019 into 2020, and then we went 2020 to 2022 when things were really bad, and then slowly we rose again from the ashes and learned about something that had only happened about 100 years earlier in 1918, the flu pandemic of 1918. So, having said that, if you remember, and I was here doing those extended shows about COVID, one thing that I kept saying during all that time was urging the federal government and the state government, whether it was Governor Lamont or President Trump at the time, or our state and local health officials, Joe Ganim here and the mayor of Bridgeport, who was doing a live video every day, as many officials were, carried it right here on WICC, even toward the White House and President Trump. You know, one thing I kept saying in so many words, if you remember correctly, or if you remember incorrectly, long as you remember, I was saying, just be honest with people. Don't say, hey, this is, you remember 2 weeks to flatten the curve? How good did that, how well did that work? When you had experts saying, no, no, 2 weeks, you better say 2 years. But they didn't, because they were afraid the people were going to freak out. A lot of them would, but a lot of Americans, a lot of adults would have said, well, listen, our country and the world has been through this, so let's just do what we can do, and let's try to minimize the number of deaths, which we really couldn't. But in the end, if you remember, the vaccine experts and all that, they were largely right. They were largely right that it was immunocompromised people, the elderly and the very, very young that were among the death count, the number there, and others, they may have gotten hit hard. Some have long COVID. A friend of mine's son has never fully recovered. He's been to the hospital numerous times trying to recover. I think he's going for some new therapy now. But my point being this. If you remember, I said something to the effect of, hey, look, 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 geniuses, if you're not honest with people, you're going to do something that's going to scar and scab and anger people for years. If there's bad SH that's going to happen, just tell people. So what Governor Lamont should have done, what state health officials should have done, what President Trump should have done, which he did actually admit in a recorded interview with, I think, Bob Woodward later on that year, the next year. I remember hearing the sound bites. Just tell people, I was saying at the time, just tell people this is going to be really bad. Because if people perceive that you're not honest or you're doing something that doesn't do right by them, it's going to be a long time before they trust you again. Why am I mentioning this? Well, what has happened since COVID with the trust, shall we say, the trust factor of vaccines and vaccinations? What has happened? What has the tenor been of people who were angered during COVID who said, listen, we understand this is bad, but don't make me put something in my body that, although was built on some sound science, and now that same mRNA vaccine science that went into COVID is now being used, I heard, against, believe it or not, pancreatic cancer, and it works. But I warned back then that if you force people to do something or to take something and to put something in their bodies that they don't want to, that they perceive they would rather either stay home or work remotely or whatever, which a lot of people did, there's going to be, you're sowing the seeds of distrust. And once those seeds are sown, you're going to have to uproot a lot of trees and bushes and vines and whatever of distrust. You're going to have to do that. And we are seeing this play out in states all over the country and including here in Connecticut. And this is what we start with today at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC, House Bill 5004 that our buddy Tom O'Day was talking about yesterday. A bill from Governor Ned Lamont clarifies that Connecticut's Religious Freedom Restoration Act does not apply to school vaccine requirements. But here's my point. This is my point. Why are we even debating school vaccine requirements? If COVID hadn't happened, let's wave our magic wand here, and if we could bring back people who tragically passed away because of COVID, people who ridiculously took ivermectin during COVID. COVID was a virus. Ivermectin is an anti-parasitic used in animals and sometimes used in humans. But let's imagine none of that happened. Would we be going at each other's throats legally, politically, rhetorically in Hartford when it comes to vaccine exemptions for school kids? Like, I know there were always anti-vaxxers, but why is this even happening? That's my point. A bill backed by Governor Lamont that aims to expand Connecticut's authority over immunizations passed the House on Tuesday night, the vote 89-60. The proposal drew vocal opposition during a March public hearing. It would expand the power of the state's public health commissioner to establish vaccine recommendations, guarantee insurance coverage, blah, 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 blah. Why are we even doing this? However, now, House Republicans, and we heard from guests right here on all the programs here on WICC, they take issue with a measure in the bill that addresses the state's Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the potential effect that provision would have on a pending lawsuit before the Connecticut Supreme Court. So get this, the Connecticut Supreme Court is looking at a lawsuit that says, hey, wait a minute here, hold on. Despite what you majority Democrats say, you know that, you know, pushing this vaccine stuff on people might be illegal under Connecticut law. But now what's happening is that there's an exception built into this bill. They're carving out an exception. So a religious freedom aspect of not wanting a vaccine is likely not possible anymore. Why? Because the state may lose the case. But here's my point. How the heck did we get here? And we've been talking about this vaccine bill in Hartford for the past 2 or 3 months here. I've had guests on it. Lisa's had guests. Melissa's had guests on it. And again, in some ways, as some of our guests have said over the days here, it's not really about vaccines. It's kind of about religious freedom if you think your religion or the religion of the day or the flavor of the month. It tells you, hey, don't vaccinate, which the last time I checked, there's only like one far-out branch of Christianity. So now, because the state may lose a court case, we're going to pass a special law. Looks like we're going to pass it. Hasn't passed yet. We're going to pass a special law that says, oh, by the way, that court case that's going on now, never mind, because we're doing a cutout here. Seriously, seriously. And you know why this is happening? Because people weren't honest with us. The White House wasn't honest. Anthony Fauci wasn't honest. Governor Lamont was not honest. The state scientific people weren't honest. They knew how awful this was going to be, and they didn't have the balls to tell us. So now we're tossing circles. We're spinning the hamster wheel of dysfunction here, saying what's in a Religious Freedom Act and what's not. It's mind-numbing here. It is mind-numbing. So we start with this. It's a core question here. Do you support a bill banning the intent? Do you support, rather, the fact that Connecticut is thinking of possibly getting rid of religious exceptions for vaccines? Why are we here? How did we get here? This is so non sequitur, I don't quite understand it. Help me out here. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So please explain this to me. Why the heck are we still arguing about vaccines? I don't understand it. Now, I do get, I know, I understand part of the why. The big part of the why was, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not. In fact, I got a booster shot the other day. I just turned 65. I got two boosters because my doctor looked at my chart and said, okay, Paul, you know, judging by the fact that you're this age and this, that, and the other, I would recommend a, what did I get? Oh, tetanus. Yes. Because I don't know about you, I don't want to have tetanus for dinner tonight. A nice steaming pot of tetanus is not on my menu here. But, you know, I was reading about this story and this bill that apparently is being put in there by majority Democrats and passed the House. And apparently the General Assembly, according to Republicans, is carving out an exception into the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is being debated now by the state Supreme Court. So all of a sudden, the Democrats in Hartford are sounding the horn saying, hey, we may lose this case, so we have to change the law, like in the middle of the road, which I don't get. But my bigger question is here, why are we still debating this? And I'm not saying why in the sense that it shouldn't be debated. I'm saying why are we still tied up in something that you'll have to admit was not a second thought before COVID? Well, why? Because there was not enough honesty during COVID. There just wasn't. I'd hear stuff out of the governor and out of the mayors in this state and out of the president that I would talk about the very day on this show with experts in epidemiology. And they say, no, they're not being honest here. I'm sorry, folks. This is maddening. The fact that we're now doing a legislative twister in Hartford because the state is wrestling with RFK Jr. And oh, my God. Oh, my God. How the heck did we get here? It is mind-numbing that we're tied up in this in the year 2026. Rich in Fairfield starts us off today. Rich, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. Paul, you're right on target. Let's do a little historical perspective here. Yeah. Never mind the lying with climate change, lying that went on just before and after COVID.
Yep.
I'm old enough to remember the name Jonas Salk.
Oh, yeah.
That first group in 1955.
Wow.
When the 4-H letters in the New York Times came out, and he became a god to our parents with the polio vaccine.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
And we took it. It was based on real science. It was a dead virus. It was real material. And when I was a kid, if you got something, you got through it.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my mother on a phone when I'm about 8 years old and talking to a friend of mine's mother. He goes, he does? I'll send my sister and me right up. And you got the German measles and the measles and the mumps and the chicken pox, okay?
Yeah.
Now, we're better off if you have real vaccines, which we had up until around COVID when the dishonesty started. It's nothing more than gene therapy. The mRNA is science.
Yeah.
Just like climate, they lied to us. They took the money, and then Congress absolved them of any future possible liability. And now you're hearing the real scientists, okay, saying, you know, the people that were forced to do it because of work and get it, or you got to go to school, you get the vaccine. They're not certain that maybe years down the road there might not be some genetic mutations or something because of what was forced on the public, okay? Anytime Al Gore is a climate expert as a layperson, and you have the same kind of charlatans getting involved with the vaccine. So we've got to get away from real science. Pharmaceuticals and the government took the easy way, took the money, and so you're right on target. Dishonesty is unbelievable.
Yeah, and Rich, thank you for the – and listen, I'm a vaccine guy. I believe in vaccine guys, but their messaging was all wrong. And I don't know how many people I interviewed that were actual biologists, virologists, infectious disease people who said, no, the COVID vaccine will not keep you from getting COVID. No vaccine does. If you contract it, the goal was they were crossing their fingers that you wouldn't get sick enough that you would end up in a hospital. Because remember, the big fear was not, well, the fear obviously was around people dying, but remember what it was? Hospital beds. Are we going to take up every bed in every hospital with COVID? And now, because there was a lot of misunderstanding, and the White House and Fauci and even the people here in Connecticut wouldn't come out and say, this is bad. People, this is pretty freaking bad. A ton of people are going to die, just the way they did in 1918. So what they did was they sowed the seeds of distrust, which we see playing out in Hartford right now. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Is this guy all stacked up and loaded for bear today? Jeez, Dan Haar, senior editor, columnist, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, how are you, sir? What's going up on a Wednesday?
I'm looking for a religious exemption in this interview.
All right, you have it. I got it directly from the Holy Father. How about that?
There you go.
Aaron Stewart, more Aaron Stewart stuff. What do you think? How is this shaking? I don't know, Dan, whether this hurts her, helps her. Is she going to lose people? Are people sticking by her? What's your latest read on this?
Well, she says it's helping her. And so far, we've seen that with very few politicians, one named Donald Trump, where, you know, every time anything bad happens to him, it helps him at the ballot box.
Yeah.
She's saying that her support among delegates is firm, and that if anything, she told our friends at the Mirror, Mark Pasniokas, if anything, and I think Chris Keating at the Current, if anything, delegates are coming her way because they think that this is a witch hunt, her words. Obviously, at this point, if nothing else comes out about her, it doesn't hurt her terribly, and it may help her. The question is, what else is going to come out? What did she know? When did she know it? Who did they help? Who are these people? And how close was she to the process that was in place to help some taxpayers avoid interest?
Yeah, and listen, her rebuttal here, Dan, I found interesting. Well, it was old ladies or seniors who couldn't pay their taxes. They were coming to me for help. But there's still, Dan, as far as I'm reading her responses, is it just me, or is there wiggle room where some people could infer stuff? Or how do you think she has comported herself and handled herself in the response to this?
Well, you're talking about two different issues here. One is the core question of what she knew and when she knew it about these allegations of giving favors to some taxpayers. That's one thing, right? Another is the remark that she made on Dennis House's show, in which she said at the end of a 14-minute interview, yes, sir, sure, lots of people have offered me bribes. And it was, so, of course, everyone in Connecticut hears that and says, wait a minute, you didn't report this. That's a crime. right? You're not reporting a crime. Offering a bribe is a crime. And that's where she backpedaled and said these were people just belligerent, you know, and what you just described, right? These were not developers, big property owners offering bribes to excuse their taxes. These were people saying, I can't afford this. Mm-hmm. So she's generally portraying this in both issues, both in the alleged bribe question, which is not a bribe in her view, and in the underlying question of giving favors. She's portraying this as we negotiate with taxpayers who can't afford it.
Yeah.
And we say, you know, I don't know how much leeway they have, but that's how she's portraying it. Everything remains to be seen.
Sure.
You know, we have no idea whether the main target of the investigation, the tax collector, is going to be in any way charged. We have no idea. It's been referred to authorities, and that's it.
Chris Murphy, Mr. Murphy in the news again. Dan Hari says we don't get sarcasm on social media. To that, you say what?
I learned in 1991 when we first got early versions of email that sarcasm doesn't work in electronic communication.
No, it doesn't.
Right? And I thought as a young cub reporter, you know, I learned that. And I would think that a United States senator with third term would already know that. And he seems to already know it. He was fairly sheepish in his interview with Fox News where he said, I guess I learned not to use sarcasm, you know, on Twitter. He still calls it Twitter, which is fine.
Okay.
I don't think, as I said in my column today, I think it was fairly clear that he was not cheering on the Iranian Navy.
No, yeah, but again, the bigger point, as you mentioned, is sarcasm. And you're right, I was thinking 1991, 92, I was working at a radio station in the early 90s, and a guy says to me, hey, look at this. I said, what's that? He goes, it's email. I said, what for? And here we sit today. The vaccine. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say the even bigger point about this is it's not just sarcasm. It's that we really live in an attack world.
Yes.
You know, the Trump era is a black and white attack world mm-hmm. where everything you say can and will be used against you, whether it is or is not in context. And that's really on both sides.
Sure.
On both sides. And that's really what's happening.
Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. The vaccine bill, Dan, interesting. Are the Dems doing this to, in fact, neuter part of a Connecticut court case that's going on right now? Is that their intention?
Well, I don't know about their intention, but I know that that's what Republicans are saying. And there is a measure in the bill that does, you know, look, from time to time, the legislature can clarify laws. Right. I suggested they do that in the Aquarion merger case. Clarify, if you want to clarify, what you intended. And there's nothing wrong with clarifying. And that's what they're doing here. They're clarifying that, no, what we said in 2021 is correct and that the religious exemption does not apply. This, as you recall, in 21, they expanded the opportunities for medical exemptions to vaccines. And that's still in play.
Mm-hmm. OK, fair enough. Two things left here. Let's talk about this. Child tax credit, something that seems to happen a lot here, but what are there talks going on about the dollar figure and how to do this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are lots of bills of tax cut and rebate and credits on the table. Unfortunately for the people, the advocates for a child tax credit, that measure ranging from, you know, any amount up to $600 million, mm-hmm. you know, they'll take what they can get like everyone else. No child tax credit made it into the Finance Committee's budget. And of course, like all the other committees, the Finance Committee is dominated by Democrats. Apparently, that doesn't mean it's dead. People are still talking about a child tax. And by the way, it is bipartisan. There are certainly Republicans who like the child tax credit. There's no question about it. The issue is it's expensive. You know, there's no cheap way to do a child tax credit because either you have a meaningful credit or you don't. And guess what? There are a lot of children, not as many as we'd like to see, mm-hmm. but there are a lot.
And finally, you know, Dan, when you and I were a lot younger, as you mentioned, and you and I both had a an involvement in sports, particularly covering, at least for me, a lot of college sports, and likely for you, you didn't pay players. Now you have to pay players to come in for at least a year, and maybe that's it. And Dan Hurley earlier, and you wrote a piece about that, Dan Hurley saying, well, this is nice, but now I have to put together a totally new team here.
Dang it, I think I was worth $20 or $30 a week for that, for playing Ultimate Frisbee for my university. The issue here is, where does the money come from?
Yeah.
Right? Dan Hurley is asking for support for the team, and he should. He's the top coach in the country, mm-hmm. and he's got the top program in the country, not the top team this year, but the top program over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And God bless him. He should be asking for support. Where does the support come from? Does it come from taxpayers? Mm-hmm. Does it come from the university's budget that come out of classrooms? Does it come from companies? He wants it to come from companies.
Yeah.
But there again, that doesn't come cheap, because if $20 million goes to UConn's basketball team from companies on their ad budgets, that's $20 million mm-hmm. that doesn't go someplace else. The win-win-win is what we're starting to see, which is, this is a national team. You know, this could be like Penn State or Notre Dame sure. football in the 90s. This, if UConn remains a national team, then you get national sponsorships like we saw this year with Aquaphor and a couple of others. Then, now you're bringing in money from the outside. That's all good.
So you mean some sports bar and stores or Mansfield is not writing fat checks to UConn? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, that's exactly right. And you and I, in this conversation, are glossing over a lot of rules and boxes and buckets, which if we ever had a half an hour, we could talk about. But the bottom line is, there are guardrails against, you know, the old big bad system of 2 years ago when rich boosters just pooled their money and handed it to players.
Yeah.
That's gone already.
Yeah.
That's not in effect anymore.
No. Well, not that we know. No, you're right. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media.
Yeah, right.
Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Dan, thanks. Have a happy rest of the week. We appreciate it. Thanks, man.
If you want to pool your money for reporters, I'm happy.
All right. Yeah, you and me both. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media.